Flint, Michigan. How did a simple flip of a switch lead to a long-term public health crisis that tested the resilience of its residents? In this Science of Crime podcast series, we will examine the chain of events that led to years of damage, distrust, and dirty water. My name is Priya Takor. This is episode 10. Students Led Astray. Flashback to grade school. It's a hot, sweaty day. You've just finished playing on the playground at recess with your friends, and you run towards the water fountain to grab some sips. The first sips are heavenly. You might even fill up your whole water bottle with it. So if this water was contaminated with lead, you would have gotten serious lead poisoning. So why is there lead in drinking water? Are there other ways that children are getting lead poisoning? And if so, how do we fix this? In this episode, I will investigate these questions. So, how does lead get into the water? It's through the pipes that transport the water. According to the U.S. Department of Education, the average age of a public school building in the United States is 44 years old. And about 44 years ago, lead-based plumbing did not present an issue. It was a more sustainable and cost-efficient way to maintain the pipes without constantly having to replace them. Additionally, lead-based plumbing wasn't even phased out in 2014, which means that even some schools built 6 years ago have pipes that can leak lead into the water. Okay. So clearly there's an issue about why lead pipes are still installed in schools. But why do these pipes end up seeping lead into the school drinking water? Different than homes, during summer and breaks, the water just sits in the pipes without being used. Especially during COVID-19 pandemic, more schools are not in session, which has caused an even more of a reason for the water to be stagnant. The longer the water sits in those pipes, the more the lead accumulates. And additionally, there's a layer on the pipes that is meant to protect the water from lead seeping in. However, without the water being flushed and move around for periods of time, the layer slowly starts to erode. So beyond water, there is another source of lead that children can be exposed to in schools, and that's paint. Lead was added to paint for multiple reasons. One being that it improved the durability of how long the paint lasted. Lead is a heavy metal. Therefore, adding it to the paint would allow it to repel moisture better. Another reason was that it dried fast. Companies found that adding lead to their paint would increase the popularity of their products. Paint would deteriorate at a lesser rate, more people were going to buy it. As we now know, the ingestion of and exposure of lead can lead to negative health effects, especially in children. Therefore, lead-based paints got banned in 1978. However, homes and schools built before 1978 are likely to still have lead in their paints. About 24 million houses nationwide have high levels of lead in their paint. And of that 24, there are young children living in 4 million of them. Similar to the idea of many schools still using lead-based plumbing, many schools still have lead-based paint on their walls. When the paint chips off the walls and breaks off into small particles, it can be inhaled or ingested along with the dust. And this will cause irreversible damage from lead poisoning. We're going to focus on one area that brought attention to the rampant lead poisoning crisis in our schools nationwide, and that's Flint, Michigan. As talked about in episodes before, Flint, Michigan was one of the first areas where lead toxicity in the drinking water broke into the media and became a household worry for families. But in Flint, the water crisis did not just stop when it left the houses of the residents. Instead, it moved right into the school's water. This affected children every day who would go up to fill up their water bottle or grab a quick sip from the water fountain. 30,000 children would go to school, drink water, and get lead damage. 30,000 students in Flint alone. The children not only being exposed at home, but also at school, were getting extreme amounts of lead exposures in unhealthy ways. Now, this is where lead poisoning goes nationwide. Schools across the country have issues regulating and controlling the amounts of lead in their systems. Linda Young, the director of Clean Water Network of Florida, admits that they too are having an issue with regulating the water.
We're in exactly the same situation as Flint, Michigan, because we are taking chances with our children. We're taking big chances.
So clearly this is a nationwide issue. And part of the reason that it's become a systemic issue is due to the lack of regulation and the amount of lead that can be in water and paint. Similar to the water, there's barely testing and checking to see if there's lead in paints. Out of the 12% of school districts inspected for paint, 7.7 million students were exposed to paint. Testing needs to be more common in order to fully identify how many children are being affected. However, testing is expensive. It can take thousands of dollars to get proper testing in a single school. The EPA has created a toolkit with the intention to help schools find funding sources to help check water quality. Additionally, a $26 million grant will be used to help test for lead levels in low-income and inner-city schools. However, so many children have irreversible mental effects. The education system is severely underfunded. There has been an increase in the exposure and ingestion of lead. This can lead to poor attention, school difficulty, and lower IQ scores. More children are likely to need special education. Flint School's Superintendent Derek Lopez shared some light on the statistics of how much special education has increased.
We have about 28% of our students who have individual education plans, which is double the state average.
However, the schools are not able to fully foster and nurture all these students who need this care. Many students are being left out and having to be in regular classes, despite their needing special help. Nakia Wakes, a resident of Flint, Michigan, had a 6-year-old child, Jalen, who had been exposed to lead for many years. Their school district and homes were flagged for having one of the highest lead exposures in Flint. He had skipped around from multiple schools for a while. Through the years, he got more absences and suspensions due to the medical effects that he had as a result of the lead. Jalen was unable to receive the proper education he needed. He needed to be in an environment that would help him, not give him disciplinary action for when he couldn't pay attention or did bad on an exam. If he had gotten the proper care, he might have instead had a more successful schooling experience. So how do we fix this problem? There are two major areas that need to be addressed when attempting to fix the damage caused by lead poisoning in the school systems. The first is to create environments that can properly foster the dramatic increase in special education. Since many children are victims of lead poisoning, they now have mental deficiencies that require more hands-on and detailed learning curriculum and environments. There are so many programs that work tirelessly to help special education kids integrate into schools and set them up for success. One of those amazing programs is Best Buddies. I decided to interview a deputy director of the friendship programs at Best Buddies, Erin Smith. And I asked her, do you think that the programs and children would benefit from an increase in funding? And if so, how?
You know, it takes money to be able to start new school chapters and to have new connections with employers. For example, create a fund where schools who aren't able to pay to have a chapter, because the dues are small in general, you know, considering it's for a whole year. For example, there are schools that can't afford that. And so we're working to create a fund where we're able to, you know, reach into schools that sometimes need it more because those students may have less opportunities in general for inclusion. And it allows them to have a chapter.
I then asked her why special education is so important.
Even when we think within special education, I think special education programs can do a lot of good because within schools, people need accommodations, whether or not you have a disability, right? Mm-hmm. But I think people who have a disability have certain challenges, you know, academically or socially, and we all should have accommodations so we can function well. And so I think there are a lot of times when, you know, the special education is a space that they find that and they're able to really succeed because of that. Just because they have disabilities doesn't mean they're less capable. I think a lot of times it looks different.
The work that Erin and her other colleagues at Best Buddies do are important in helping and fixing the damage caused by lead poisoning. The increase in funding would allow for more chapters and more schools to create a safer and better learning environment for the students who need the special education without ostracizing them. The second area that needs to be addressed and improved is the lack of testing. So many schools are not tested to see if they have levels of lead in their water or paint. There should be strict mandatory testing and law enforcement to get this testing done. In order to have this happen, there needs to be an increase of funding to the education system to allow schools to get better pipes and new paint. The future of education reform involves making a safe environment for everyone, which includes both special education and inner city students. And this possibility of creating a better, safer environment is dependent on the reallocation of money and resources to the education system itself and other programs. With these steps, we will be able to create a better environment and a better future for children.